You're back listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR. And Ange, can you hear us now?
I can hear you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us on the show. So just to introduce you again, Ange is a Socialist Alliance member and community services worker. And we invited Ange Carr on the show today to speak about some of the social determinants of health, drawing from this article we read last week in The Guardian about homelessness and the fact that people are dying before 44, which is about 30 years premature of the average lifespan in Australia. And we've thanks Jordan as well, who's also a member of the radio team, for preparing the interview for us. And so for listeners who may not be aware, can you quickly explain what the social determinants of health are and how these are related to more holistic ways of understanding health, well-being and illness?
Yeah, of course. So the social determinants of health are really the external factors outside of our biology that contribute to a person's health outcomes. So we know in our capitalist society, we see individuals being blamed for the challenges they experience throughout their lives. But the social determinants of health help to clarify and explain the conditions and the structural reasons of health disadvantage. Because we know that we don't live in a bubble, and the idea that we're all born equal and have equal opportunity is completely false. So health, illness and disadvantage are defined by a person's social experience. And so more broadly, some of the determinants relate to cultural, political and economic factors within society. And because we're talking about The Guardian article and the premature death of homeless people experiencing homelessness, housing is one of the key subcategories of the social determinants of health, because we know without housing, it's almost impossible to function and thrive in society. So some of the other determinants are things like access to money, access to food, especially for young children when they're growing and developing, access to healthcare, education, employment, and community support is also a really important one. And we know that these are all things that people experiencing homelessness have huge barriers with throughout their lives.
Yeah, so thanks for that, Ange. And I guess going into the next question, according to the World Health Organization, social determinants can be more important than individual lifestyle choices in influencing health. What do you anticipate the health impacts of the Victorian state government's plans to demolish its existing public housing to be as a greater number of Victorians are pushed into homelessness?
Well, this is going to have an absolutely devastating impact on people that are marginalised or getting pushed to the margins in the current cost of living crisis. So I used to work in the homelessness sector, but I currently work in the family violence sector. And often public housing is one of the only sort of exit plans for women and children experiencing family violence. And we've seen that the state government has done nothing to increase housing stock over the last 20 years. And we actually have less public housing than we did two decades ago, when housing affordability was not a front and centre issue. So as this housing continues to be privatised to the for-profit community housing sector, we know that the most disadvantaged will not be housed. And I saw this when I worked in the homelessness sector, because tenants are cherry-picked for social housing properties. And with the current demolitions, people are being displaced from their community, and isolation and connection, which I've already mentioned, is a health determinant. And that really leads to people having poorer physical and mental health outcomes. And the reality is, the first people that end up on the street are those that are the most vulnerable in society. And they are people that have no one to turn to because of their adverse childhood experiences. So I'm not sure if people are aware of this, but there's a ACE scale, we call it, and the higher you rate on that scale, the more disadvantage you will have over your life. And it's been shown that people that have really high ACE scores do have a much reduced lifespan, because they've experience significant trauma in childhood. So they're more likely to develop poor mental health. They're more likely to smoke. They may be more likely to self-medicate with alcohol and other drugs. So, you know, the people that end up on the street really are the most vulnerable. And when someone is experiencing homelessness, it's very difficult to access mainstream services and support, for one, because services are completely overwhelmed by the lack of government investment, but also because people are just trying to survive day to day. And so, you know, people are looking for the next safe place to sleep, finding something to eat. You know, obviously to have good health, you need to have nutritious food, but this just can't happen when you're sleeping rough. And there's a hypervigilance that occurs when people are sleeping rough. You know, it's very difficult to sleep on the street. Violence is a very real issue. And, I mean, we've seen studies in shift workers show that shift workers have reduced lifespan because of the poor sleep that they experience. So you can only imagine how much that this impacts the homeless population. Of course, there's lots of barriers for people obtaining decent medical care with often preventable conditions. So, you know, we see things like a basic infection turns to sepsis and leads to death because people aren't able to manage their health needs, you know, without adequate water and shelter and things like that. Things like dental care. So studies also show that if you have poor dental hygiene, that leads to higher rates of cardiovascular disease and stroke. So that also leads to premature death. And we have to talk about mental health. And I know in that article, it showed that 17% of the data, the people that passed away, was actually due to suicide. And the article mentioned deaths of despair, and that's very true. And there were other high rates of drug and alcohol overdose. And, I mean, you know, it wasn't captured whether they were suicides, but, you know, that you could also argue that that could potentially be the case. And I think there's a misconception that people that that are experiencing homelessness is because they have a mental health condition or they have a drug and alcohol condition. And certainly that can be one of the comorbidities once someone experiences homelessness, but often it's just a way of coping. And if you didn't have poor mental health before you became homeless, certainly that experience and that trauma really does lead to poor mental health for people. And we know that we don't have access to mental health services. Even the mainstream population is struggling to access mental health support. So, you know, there's a lot of work for government to do.
Yeah, definitely. We do have a mental health crisis here in Australia, and we know all about those long waiting lines to see a psychologist. And it is very important to draw those links between the mental health crisis and the housing crisis. And yeah, thanks for sharing all that with us, Ange. Homelessness also can be such an isolating experience too. I mean, I've heard of people dying of loneliness, whereas if you do have a stable place to live, a place to call home, you know, you might have, you know, people living in the house with you, you'll have neighbours. If you live in public housing or what's left of it, it's collective living and you might be living in a more supportive environment. But I wanted to ask just a little bit more on, because you mentioned women and children and the fact that vulnerable people are the ones that are most impacted by homelessness. Can you tell us more about how particular social determinants of health impact the lifespan and quality of life of other oppressed groups in Australia, like maybe the impact on refugees, because I know that they're one of the highest group experiencing homelessness, or migrant workers, Indigenous people?
Yeah, so definitely in Australia, there are particular groups of people that are overrepresented as people experiencing homelessness. So as you've said, people from refugee background, First Nations communities, LGBTI community, young people, those exiting prison, and women escaping family violence, or now we're increasingly seeing older women over the age of 55. And really, we see that our capitalist system, it pits marginalised groups of workers against each other. And so it's these groups of people that experience the greatest lack of equity in society. And so racism and discrimination is one of the other social determinants of health. So all of those groups fall in under that category. So if we think about First Nations people who've lived through colonisation and genocide, we've had generations of policies formed on racist ideas, and this can also be said for, refugee communities. So people have huge barriers in accessing the basics, such as money, healthcare, education. Communities, First Nations communities, were torn apart. They lost that connection with each other, and that leaves deep mental scars. So, of course, this all impacts the physical and mental health of people. And there's a lot of housing discrimination too. So we know that if you don't have access to money, like many of these marginalised communities, you can't even rent a property now. But if you are from a minority group or a group that's discriminated against in society, it's harder to, even if you have the money, for landlords to, willingly take you on. We think about the LGBTI community, for example. You know, trans people are discriminated against when they're trying to flat share, and, it's really difficult for marginalised groups, and it all falls under the social determinants of health.
Yeah, so, Ange, when you ran as a social science candidate in the last state election, you spoke about, the growing inequality, the housing crisis in Geelong, and average working class people becoming homeless each day. And I guess it's clear that all these social and that housing and all other social and economic problems are interrelated. And I guess why is it important that we need to push the state and the government, federal government, to address these problems? Can you tell us, why it's important to build community organising and why community organising is also very important to getting affordable housing?
Of course, yeah. So, the reality is no levels of government are listening. So I saw a subsequent article where Minister for Housing Julie Collins came out expressing her shock about the premature deaths of people sleeping rough. I almost threw my phone across the room, because we know for far too long government have made the political decisions to turn a blind eye to the issue. Because the state and federal government have the power to solve this crisis. But what we're seeing, especially from the federal government, is crucial money is being wasted on war. So $362 billion on submarines is completely absurd when we have people living on the street. People cannot feed their children. The average worker is struggling to pay their rent or their mortgages today. But we know that the people in power are also our landlords. So it doesn't benefit them to change the laws like capital gains or implement rate caps, as an example, because it's the capitalist push for those that have money to accumulate more wealth. We've seen many community campaigners have been campaigning really hard on this issue over the last decade, but it's actually hit the mainstream psyche now. So this is the time for community campaigns to really take hold. We know the only time that significant social change has occurred, it comes from mass movement. So that's why it's important for community campaigners to really keep up this fight, because we're hitting the point where the social conditions are ripe for action now. And we know until all levels of government commit to large-scale building programs of public housing, that this crisis, it just will not be solved. So that's why we need to keep fighting back.
Yeah, definitely. And this has been a really interesting interview, Ange, and we're about to wrap up. So before we do, is there anything else that you'd like to let listeners know?
Yeah, I think probably we could talk about this for probably a week.
Mm.
But I think the take-home message here is we need to continue to expose the systems and structures for what they are, because it's not an individual's issue. We need to fight back against the oppression and injustice. In a rich country like Australia, it's an absolute disgrace that we have people dying on the street at age 44. It's completely outrageous and it's completely unnecessary. So we need to collectively fight back against these injustices and inequity in society. And we need those large-scale investments into health and welfare programs that actually focus on early interventions that improve people's lives from a young age. We need to be raising income support above the poverty line. You know, there's so many huge social reforms that are required, mental health, family violence, but building public housing is absolutely at the top of that to-do list for us.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much, Ange. It's always great having you on the show, and we love the work that you do.
Oh, thanks, everyone. Have a good day.
Have a good day. You were just listening to Ange Carr, who's a Socialist Alliance member and community services workers, speak about how particular social determinants of health impact the lifespan and quality of life, and also talking about the government's lack of action and on the housing crisis and the need for the community to keep fighting back. We're just going to go to a quick break, and you'll be back with more Green Left Radio on